Welcome to the Grow Bold with Disability podcast, brought to you by Feros Care, a podcast dedicated to smashing stereotypes and talking about the things people with disability care about most to help us live bolder, healthier, better connected lives. I'm journalist Pete Timms.
And I'm Tristan Peters. I work for Disability Service Directory Clickability and am a wheelchair user living with spinal muscular atrophy.
Today's episode of Grow Bold with Disability is Growing Bold with Technology. And our guest is Rowan O'Reilly, who is the founder of Smart Bodies, Smarter Minds, Australia's first integrated virtual reality neurorehabilitation clinic. In this episode, we'll hear how Rowan is thinking outside the box and using technologies once only used by gamers to help people with brain injuries, strokes, and spinal cord injuries. Ro, welcome to Grow Bold with Disability.
Thank you very much. Good morning, gentlemen. It's great to be here.
Yeah, thanks for coming along. So, I mean, Ro, you opened Smart Bodies, Smarter Minds Clinic in 2009. Can you explain to us what it's all about?
Well, can I give you a bit of an update first? That is correct. Smart Bodies, that story ended at the end of last year, and a new story began, which based on the foundations that I put together during that 10-year journey. So it's even more exciting now. But yes, it did start in roughly 2009.
And so, what was the mission behind that? What was the why did you feel it was necessary to begin the clinic?
Look, the issue was to me always that, look, I was always interested personally. I'm a high kinesthetic, so it means I love to move, you know. And I was always interested in, well, how do you improve human performance in a smart type of way? Because, you know, there are two ways to do everything, obviously. There's sheer effort, and there's leverage. And I thought, well, surely, you know, at this point in time, there may be better ways to do this than what appears to be happening, what has happened for a long time. And it really was, the initial goal was just, it was about improving human performance. Basically, to condense a very long story, what happened was that I started to realize that, you know, although the majority effort was pointed towards physical inputs to produce increase physical outputs, that the reality of the story was that physicality is not controlled by our body. It's controlled by our mind and our central nervous system. And on top of that is really how we feel, our emotional intelligence and our ability to focus our mind. So I suppose that's what started me thinking about, well, you know, if that's the case, and it appeared that it was, then how do we go about collecting data to actually prove that that is the case? And then how can we use that data to actually create better ways of improving performance? So really, that's what started the whole thing back then.
And so then where did the idea for the virtual reality technology come about?
Well, back then VR wasn't really, you know, an issue. It had started its development in about the 1960s. And I actually have you know, a friend who was around, I think it was maybe Princeton at the time when they were working on the very first versions of VR. And they used to call it, basically, was equivalent to the vomit comet, because nobody could stand it for more than a couple of minutes. The optics were so bad. And interestingly, I showed him a commercialized version of it a couple of years ago, and he hadn't seen it since back then, and he was just drawing the ground. He couldn't believe how different it was. That was a pretty amazing thing. But look, I think it wasn't actually that I was looking for VR. It was understanding and coming back to that point that human physicality is greatly controlled by the nervous system, and you know, obviously the mind is a key part of that. And there's two parts to our consciousness, and that would be the alert awakening part and the other. And the other, you know, for most people, plays a much greater role in how we exhibit ourselves in daily life in terms of what we do and why we do it. So what I was trying to look into is, well, it would be great if there was a way where we could more effectively connect with the subconscious mind, you know, because a lot of us sports people at the top ends were using hypnotherapy, for example, for long periods of time, to various degrees of success. The problem with hypnotherapy is only about half the population is susceptible to it in most cases. you know, and the people it works well for, it works very well for, and the other people it does nothing. So the issue was I was actually looking for that type of input. And then, you know, I was hearing murmurings about VR, for quite a while, but it was nowhere near commercially ready yet. But I just sort of realized, well, hang on a second. Our brains, because of the visual part of our brains represents such a massive part of our neural infrastructure, it basically dawned on me that, hey, hang on a second, human beings basically believe what they see. Mm. And if you could convince the brain to the great extent that what it was seeing was real, that would probably be a very good way to act on a more subconscious or older brain pathways. And that's really when I came to that sort of conclusion, I sort of thought, well, hang on, this is where VR really could be a fantastic new tool. So that's actually how VR came into it.
Brilliant. And what's the feedback been from your patients?
Oh, look, and the truth is that VR worked better than what I hoped. And that's a really cool thing because first generation technologies, and I've been involved in a lot of them and presently still are, I mean, you know, some of them are really fantastic, but some of them are just, you know, brilliant in theory, woeful in practical execution. VR luckily has been close to flawless, which has been very, very good. And I think, you know, in terms of using it in rehabilitation, compared to standardized rehabilitation, which can produce a lot of good results, but there's finite limits to maintaining engagement, and engagement is a really big thing in rehab. It's huge. It's probably 50% of the whole game in my opinion. And when you're trying to keep people exerting or putting focus and energy into a particular set of rehabilitation movement patterns, trying to keep the level of enthusiasm up normally is really problematic over a prolonged period of time. VR does a magnificent job of making that so much easier because fundamentally what we do is we go to great lengths to find out what people are really into and then try and find VR environments to match that so that they just naturally subconsciously are already really associated to the environment they're in. So you're ahead of the ball game in the first place, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it breaks down the monotony, really, doesn't it? It just gives them something a little bit more exciting to do than just sitting there and moving their legs up and down, I guess.
Yeah, true. So true. It's so true. Yeah, like it was interesting when you realised that, you know, even in 2020, the overwhelming majority of failures in rehabilitation therapy over a period of time are due to engagement, not therapy being not technically correct.
So what's been the feedback from more traditional practitioners in this industry?
Oh, I think like every technology, you know, you have people who can see why that would be a good idea and others just can't connect with it. You know, I can't say that I don't know what people say about it behind closed doors, but like the people that we've had involved have very quickly seen the obvious capability of it and to improve outcomes through a number of ways. And so overall, I think it's a very positive. I think it would appear to me that, look, this is the way of the future.
And you spoke there about achieving positive outcomes. The results speak for themselves. What are some of the results that you've seen with stroke, spinal injury, brain injuries?
Well, again, most of the clients basically all of the clients that we deal with have essentially been through the gamut of conventional therapies and they've been able to help them extensively in most cases. But then particularly if you say looking at brain injuries, people can get really fantastic acceleration in the early days and then they plateau. Mm-hmm. And the problematic thing becomes, well, what do you do about the plateau when the set of prescribed inputs or movements for that don't have any other options? That's really problematic, and it's problematic again from an emotional or mental point of view as well as it is from a physical point of view. So people have been stoked with the ability to keep changing the environment. And I think probably succinctly putting it, a lot of what we're trying to do is create a state of heightened neuroplasticity, and that just simply means to create new pathways, new connections in the brain, because those connections in the brain ultimately things that create functional movements in the body. And so you can do things in VR. You can do things in VR that you can't do in reality. So, for example, you know, you couldn't have someone climbing Mount Everest in your usual rehab clinic. You can't have people fighting zombies, you know, and things on climbing skyscrapers. You know, and that's a brilliant thing to watch, you know. It's a brilliant thing to see people really, you know, enjoying their rehab and walking out, you know, happier, you know, in a better state than what they walked in. You know, that's a really beautiful thing to be part of.
Yeah, it's incredible. And I was watching a little thing on YouTube that you did with the ABC and Angus McConnell, who's a friend of the show here, and he stood up, a paraplegic. Now, he stood up using a lot of this rehab and so forth, which is quite incredible. Do you think Gus could have got to that stage using traditional methods, or would it have taken him longer, or was it just this whole, as you say, this, you're breaking that monotony? So he keeps telling me how he always loved going to see you. He wanted to go there and use the VR equipment as opposed to just going to a gym and attempting to move.
Angus McConnell is a legend for a start, so that helps. the simple answer is I don't know. I'd be speculating to say, because, you know, in order to know that, you would have to have done regular scans, you know, on his spinal cord and his gray matter to actually see whether changes happen. Now, I can speculate that, you know, I certainly had a deliberate plan for Angus, and it was based around what seemed to be a plausible hypothesis to me to encourage him to have some recovery of movement. But again, I don't want to say things that I can't back up with hard facts. But you know, my personal opinion would be, after many decades in the rehabilitation field, that it certainly accelerated things along. And I think that, again, taking into account that where I was when I was working with Angus initially and where I am now, very different. It's been an exponential learning path. And VR, for example, is still only just hit its second generation tech now. I mean, you know, what's ahead is going to be vastly different than what exists here, and therefore the ability to convince the brain of what it's experiencing is real is going to be vastly different, and that is the key salient thing to understand.
Absolutely. I'm a power chair user myself, and I know that when I was a kid, I was loath to do my rehab and stretches and all that sort of thing. Is the VR used a lot for kids as well, or do you primarily see adults, and what's the sort of demographic spread?
So it's reasonably broad, but I'd say the main difference is we're generally kids, you know, that we use it. It's more for behavioral issues. So here's a classic scenario. Then you have a kid who basically ends up in some trouble because he becomes a chronic gamer. And with chronic gaming, you know, you're basically developing a hypersedentary life. And then, you know, your nutrition and your movement and your interactions all seem to take a somewhat downward trend because you're looking for this, in effect, a hit, you know, a reward infrastructure hit out of engaging with the game. The problematic thing is the more you saturate any type of reward system in the brain, the harder it becomes to hit the trigger. So, you know, the reality of that scenario is we get approached by mums, often distraught, that they just simply can't get their child to do anything, and they've tried psychologists, psychiatrists, everything. And it's fundamentally because you're trying to say to that kid is that, look, you should get outside and you should exercise and you should eat well because it is good for you. But that's bypassing the important structure of the brain where it's supposed to, because the behavior is not coming from the part you're having a conversation with. It's coming from the subconscious mind, which just wants a hit. So, you know, the alternate to that we would provide is, say, you know, and it's generally relatively funny, that when you get kids and parents in and we're doing their first assessment, you're effectively having a conversation with the parents and the kids just looking around wishing you were somewhere else because he's already been dragged to us. He's already been through this scenario multiple times before, and he's sort of the interesting point of it is, and I can relate to how they feel, we seem to say to them again, how are you doing? Grunts are generally the order of the day. I hear that you're into gaming. He's like, huh? And what type of gaming are you into? And he'll mention a number of games. And I'm not a gamer, by the way, at all. I'd rather be at the beach. But essentially you say to them, okay, so you're into first-person shooter games, and most of them are, and essentially means you're in a game and you have a gun and you're shooting zombies or whatever. And they'll say, yeah. And I'll say, well, have you heard of VR? And they go, yeah. And then I said, well, how would you like to, give a try some shooting some zombies in VR or driving a tank in VR and shooting other tanks? And then all of a sudden, oh, attention on. Yeah. And then you put them into it and their parents are like thinking, you can see them crossing their fingers and toes going, oh, please let this work. And we have several what are called VR locomotion systems where you have to put physical energy into a device to dictate your experience. So, for example, we have what looks like a exercise bike, but it's actually fully integrated with VR. So, for example, we have an environment where you're driving a tank. So you be the tank commander and you're in an open field with obstacles and there are other tanks trying to get you. But in order for you to integrate, you have to push the pedals, right? And the pedals, we set the resistance up hard so it would feel like you're grinding a tank. Mm-hmm. And it's got like head-up aiming and you need spatial awareness, which means you need to be alert and you need to be pedaling. So you'll go from a kid who won't even walk around the block to a kid who's been in, pedaling his heart out for half an hour, come out and drenched in sweat with eyeballs the size of saucers and smiling, and the parents are just like, oh my God. That's what's beautiful about it, because you're not forcing anyone to do anything. You're simply saying, here's something that we think you might like, it's self-guided interaction. Mm. Yeah. That's what's so cool about it. Yeah. And then we can attach, different types of technologies or biometric data technologies and find out exactly what it's doing to them.
Incredible. It's just, it's tricking them into it. It's great. Now, we mentioned at the start, smart bodies, smarter minds, and you said that's kind of all wrapped up at the end of last year. What's the new project? Are you allowed to talk about it?
Yeah, absolutely. It's really exciting. So the new project's called Engage VR Rehab. So this one's much more a collaboration. So we have some partners who are basically very well respected in the allied health field. And essentially what it is taking the best elements out of conventional allied health practices for rehabilitation across body and mind, and then combining them with what I've been working on and developing over the last 10 years of this technology and data, biometric data acquisition model. And because that sounds dull, but why it's so completely relevant is that, say, for example, you've had a serious injury, and you may be faced with a very prolonged rehabilitation journey. The thing is that, again, what you want is to be sure that all of that consistent effort that you have to put in, time, money, heartache, is actually doing what you want it to do. Okay, so what happens traditionally now is that you essentially have a combination of what are called subjective and objective measures. And that subjective is, how do you feel about it? I think it's doing well. And objective will be, okay, can you actually move your arm or your legs more? Okay. And so whether that happens or not in a time frame that you want it to is a very different thing. For most people, it can never happen soon enough. And that's completely obvious why that would be the case. But what we're moving to is a position where we can interact with people in our clinic and set them up with a series of stimulation. So it might be VR, it may be locomotion, it may be combined with electrical stimulation, either on their brain or on their body. And then we can attach sensors to that that are basically connected up in a way that shows exactly what it's doing to the person. So, for example, if we're trying to create more movement in a leg, we want to see that the part on the brain that's responsible for moving that leg or sending creating the signals to output that movement is actually being stimulated, mm-hmm. right? And yep. and that can be done on a real-time basis so that every session and during the course of a session, you have someone like air traffic controllers looking at your data and going, you might want to pedal just a little bit harder there or just turn to the left a little bit more. And then all of a sudden, because we know we're seeing, oh, that light is on now. Mm-hmm. You're hitting the target. And then we're collecting all this information in files, and then we can show you exactly what your effort's doing. Then we can share that also with your whoever's referred you, whether your GP, your specialist, or your allied health team, to say here's where they are, and here's what's happening.
Fantastic.
That's really cool. That's the coolest thing about it.
Yeah, incredible.
And so, in terms of you mentioned there where VR's going, do you think that we'll get more widespread adoption of it? Are we getting to the point where more practitioners will take this on? And because it's, as we've said so many times, the results are amazing.
Well, put it this way, at the moment, VR is being used to train tens of thousands of healthcare workers to upskill them. Mm. So you're seeing different. You're starting to see either circumstances dictating a method for more lifelike training of people in situations where it's just not plausible to do all of that physically. So what I think is one of the things that's going to dictate its progression more into allied health is training. So you would have essentially like a model. I think you move from a model where you have theory and practice to you have a theory, you have VR, and you have practice. Mm. And the beautiful thing about that is that I'm also involved with another medical technology company, which I founded a couple of years ago. And basically what we're doing is working on technology to basically enhance the sensory and motor function of people who have had strokes or brain injuries and don't have hand or arm function. The relevance of that story is that the technology we're delivering is taking it to the next level about how VR can allow you to interact on a deeper level of immersion. And immersion just means your brain believes it more. So VR now, you can see it, right? And as we mentioned before, your brain greatly believes what you can see. But if you can do things like feel in VR as well, that's a completely different level. I mean, and that's what it's moving to. That's what I mean when VR is going to move to. It's going to move to a point where you can have multi-sensory, where you could feel, you could smell, you would be able to have a resistance. You could have hot and cold. That's where it's going. And that'll be the thing that'll make it, I think, an indispensable tool in health.
Incredible. Now, Ro, if I'm listening to this podcast and I wanted to get in contact with you guys, or if I wanted to, use some of this, think that this stuff could work for me, what's the easiest way? Is there other people around Australia? Because you're based in Newcastle. Is there other people in Australia, or is it just you working in this?
No. So we have a team based at Mayfield, and in our Engage VR rehab clinic. And so that clinic is a pilot clinic, and so we basically have we have firmly made plans to be able to expand that clinic model into other capital cities, and it looks highly likely it's going to go offshore as well, because again, the idea is in healthcare is moving more and more towards a data based outcomes, mm-hmm. because people want proof,
yeah.
and the people who pay for healthcare want proof as well, and so you combine the fact where you got this completely different experience of rehab for the client, and then on the other hand you have the proof of it. That's really the secret sauce of it.
Yeah, exactly.
Ro, as you're aware, this podcast is called Grow Bold with Disability, and we like to ask all our guests, what does growing bold mean to you?
Well, I think growing bold to me means basically everyone's got their limit, their personal safety limit, for lack of better words, when it comes to emotional stuff. I think in order to grow bold, what you need to do is grow larger, and the only way you can do that is to push that boundary. And I think that ultimately means being more comfortable, being in a place where you're not comfortable. You know, I think that's the only way you can truly make significant advances in your life.
Beautiful. Now, Ro, thanks so much for joining us today on Grow Bold with Disability, brought to you by Feros Care. And our listeners can find out a lot more about Ro's amazing work in the links provided in today's episode show notes. Ro O'Reilly, thanks for joining us today, mate.
It's a great honour. Thank you so much. I love your great work. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. And if you have enjoyed today's episode, then make sure you subscribe to the podcast, Grow Bold with Disability. And if you like what you heard, then please take a few moments to pop over to iTunes and give our podcast a quick rating so we can continue these conversations and encourage people to grow bold. This podcast is brought to you by Feros Care, an NDIS partner delivering local area coordination services in Queensland, South Australia, and the Australian Capital Territory. Feros Care is a people care organisation committed to helping people live bolder lives. We call it Growing Bold, and for over 25 years, Feros has been making it real for both older Australians and those living with disability. To find out more, head to feroscare.com.au.